A couple of weeks ago, we gave a shiur that tangentially touched upon the mitzvah of Simcha and Chanukah, if such a mitzvah exists. So we're not going to talk in the general terms, we're going to talk about three specific issues that come up at Chanukah parties. So since I have a feeling this year, we're going to have twice as many of those shilas, because although there are only technically one Sunday Chanukah, but I think some people agree from this reason, Magdimah L'mitzvahs, and Akfarm Magdimah L'mitzvahs. So I think some of the Chanukah parties are going to start the Sunday a little bit before Chanukah Mincha. So we'll talk a little bit about what I think are many of the shahs that come up in terms of Chanukah parties. Some of them are most obvious in terms of the mitzvah of Lukas Deres Chanukah. Then there are a few other odds and ends in terms of related to latkes and donuts and other things that are usual at Chanukah parties. So of course, the most relevant in terms of Chanukah per se is the first of the Marmukamos, where the Gemara formulates for us the requirements or the ability to fulfill the mitzvah of Deres Chanukah if one is not home. So Amr of Sheshes, the Gemara begins at Shabbos with Gimel Aleph. Amr of Sheshes, Achsenoi Chay Ben Chanukah. A guest is obligated in Eretz Chanukah. So that's somewhat of a chiddush, because most of the Chanukah revolves around one's home, near Rishu Beiso, when it's supposed to leave it on Pesach Habayis, Pesach Chotzos. So much revolves around the home. And yet one would have thought that if I'm not home, so then I don't have an obligation to light Chanukah candles. Kamash one, it's not true. That even though I am an Achsenoi, I am still Chayav. And the Gemara is going to explain, it's even a big chiddush, and I can actually be Yotzei in the house that I'm at, even though it's not really my home. So Amar Rav Zeira tells us that Beresh Kiyava Avina Beirav, when I used to be younger, says Rav Zeira, before I was married, so I was a Talmud in Yeshiva, Mishtativta Beprite Bahad Yishpiza. So I used to live in by the family, and I would simply be Mishtati Bepruta, I would give a little bit of an amount of money to buy a share in the Balabayas with oil. Rabbi Zeira said, I didn't let my own menorah, I was mishtatit bepruta, and that was perfectly acceptable. But to fulfill the halacha of achsenoi chayav ben chanukah, it's not necessary to light oneself. One can simply piggyback onto the hadlocha of the Baal HaBayis. So there is a machlokes haposkim about, is Rabbi Zeira telling us a kula, or is Rabbi Zeira telling us what you have to do? So the simple pshat in the halacha is, that's what we generally paskin, is that Rabbi Zeira is telling us a kula. That I would have thought that you have to schlep your own menorah, bring your own oil, kamash, v'lon, Rabbi Zeira, you don't have to bother with that. Just give a pruta, give a nickel to the Baal HaBayis and buy a share of his oil or his candles, and that suffices. You want to bring your own oil, you want to schlep your menorah, tovo lecha bracha, why not? That's beautiful, that's wonderful. Rabbi Zeira was just telling us as an option that you don't even have to do that. And others said, no, Rabbi Zeira was telling us that you have to do it that way. You actually can't be yotze any other way, because Ner Chanukah has to be in one's home. So how can I light if I don't live there? I'm just a guest for a couple of days. It's not my house. How can I be Yotze? So the answer is you can't. You can only be Yotze because you're piggybacking on the Baal HaBayis Hadlocha. So that would be a tremendous chumrah. What that would mean is the person goes away for a Shabbos Chanukah and they want to light. They like to light the Roman menorah. They don't want just to give the cheaper way, just give it a nickel. So there's some postmen say you're not Yotze. But you wouldn't be Yotze at all that way. You have to dafka do a mishtat v'puta. The Minhag HaOlam is not that way. The Mishabura doesn't even quote that other opinion. Mishabura assumes that Dabba Poshut, that one has the option either of being Mishtat Bepruta or bringing one's own menorah. Mishabura actually said it's nice to bring your own menorah. Why should you piggyback on somebody else? On mitzvah yes, Mishlucha, do yourself. That's what most people practice. The Rav disagreed with that. The Rav was of the opinion, and he felt like the other poskim, that really Rabbi Zeir was telling us this is not an option. This is the only option, the only way to be Yotze. But most people don't follow that. Those Tamid with the Rav follow all the Ravans on Huggers, they follow that. Most people follow the Psach of the Mishibura and either the Mishat Meput or the Bini Ramanura.
Are you specifically saying the way the Tzias bringing your own menorah and your own oil?
No, I don't mean literally that. Well, doing your own Hadlacha. If you do your own Hadlacha, so then the person is giving you the oil, so now it becomes your menorah, becomes your oil. And so comes the Gemara and concludes the story of Rabbi Zeira. Basa did a Sibi Issa. So Rabbi Zeira said after he got married, so then he stopped even doing that. Amina hashtavadi latrichna. I don't have to light anymore. Become madlikwa lebego besoy, because my wife is lighting on my behalf. So here, Rabbi Zeira, once in a while, would be away. Be away for a couple of days during Chanukah. So he said, I no longer have to be mishtati bepruta because I have somebody who's lighting in my house, namely my wife. And then the Gemara goes on to say that this is true because women are obligated in their Chanukah. If women would not have been obligated in their Chanukah, then this wouldn't have worked, because someone who's not obligated in the mitzvah cannot light the menorah on your behalf. But since women are obligated in Eretz Chanukah, because af heim ha'yubiyos yoneis, they were included in the miracle of Chanukah, so memela, there's nothing wrong with having one's wife light on their behalf. So comes of Sheish just with the whole array of halachas, of Sheish Reb Zeira, that number one, achsenoi is chayav. Number two, that you have that ability to be yotze with halacha and probably with your own adlaka as well. And then you have the third qualification that none of this is necessary if one is married and his wife is lighting for him at home. So comes the Mishnah Berura in the second of the Maimonides and highlights what is not included in this halacha. Notice the phrase, the Gemara is achsanoi. Achsanoi means a guest. Achsanoi conjures up the image of a person who's there to stay for a little while. There are some who even say you have to be there for the entire week. Though that we're not going that far. It says the Mishnah Berura, what you have to be is least a guest, unlike the following. It says the Mishnah Berura in the second of the Maimonides, of a Misha Soed Eitzel Chavera Be'akroi. A person is not even a guest. He's just simply kind of popped in temporarily for a few hours. He has another place to light. So he has a real home. So he has to light the Neres Chanukah in his house. Because the idea being, the starting point of Neres Chanukah is, you have to light in your house. There you should be so. You have to be Malik Pesach HaBayis, Pesach HaChotz, whatever the exact location of Adlokah, Bizman HaKemar, Bizman HaZeh is. But the light, let's say, in the middle of the street. The guy's in the light of the menorah in the middle of the street. The guy's in the light of the menorah in the middle of Times Square. That's not halacha is Chanukah. Whether there is something to be gained by that or not, whether you consider that to be some kind of a kima or simei nisa, even though there's no formal mitzvah of Chanukah, so that's already a loaded discussion. So we know that there are some communities that are very, very mocking on that. Other communities don't believe that that's even true. But in terms of the mitzvah of Chanukah, nobody would say that you yotze in the street. That's why the post came right, that even though we have a custom of lighting the menorah in shul, but the person who lit the menorah in shul goes home and he lights again, because no, he wasn't really yaitse, unless he lives in the shul. That's why I never volunteered to be the one to light the menorah in my shul, because my shul's in my house. So I'm always nervous that if I light, I'll be the one to light the menorah in shul, then I can't go next door and light the next door, the next room over to light again. Maybe my next year will be less than here, but I'm going to be back to base mix, but just in case not. So hopefully at least we'll be in the new shul. So by then, maybe I can be the one to light the menorah if the 18 plus the Chanukah is. So back to the story. So coming to Shabur and says, we have to qualify this halacha that you can light when you're not Sinoi, but you have to have some connection to the house. If you're 1 foot out the door, you were there for 2-3 hours. So that's for sure not acceptable. So that, of course, raises a red flag for a practice that existed many Chanukah parties. You know, everyone's all together, the Bubbies, the Zadies, the cousins, everyone have one grandiose lighting, and everybody, they put out the 30 menorahs, and everybody lights menorah, they sing Melsua, the whole nine yards together. So the simple pshan halacha is that nobody's yaitzei that halacha except for the balabais. The person who lives, them, the children who live in that house, that's their house, they yaitzei halacha's neiros. Everybody else is not really yaitzei halacha's neiros, so therefore that's not such a great idea. Probably the more correct thing to do is let them light, let the balabais light, and then the people who are at the party, when they get home, they should light later. There is a question in the poskim. Let's say I've been at that house for a little while, but I packed my suitcases and I'm 1 foot out the door. And this is a very common shayla on Matzoi Shabbos Chanukah. So very often what happens is that people go to the parents, they go to the in-laws, they go away for Shabbos Chanukah. So the Friday night that they're there, so then that's an afternoon, they're there to sleep, they're there to eat, all the meals, they're sleeping there. So then they can light in the house of their parents. But with Matzoi Shabbos, that's they go until Sunday morning, they're out the door. But they want to light together with the Mishpacha, Matzoi Shabbos. Why? What's the big rush light with the Mishpacha? First of all, it's nice, it's sentimental. And second of all, we didn't put it on the WhatsApp group from Fridays, because everyone was in a rush. So we didn't put it on the family chat yet. So we got to light again with Matzoi Shabbos, get everybody all together, and the light, and the whole time around. So people like to do that. People like to light where they stayed over Shabbos, even though they're 1 foot out the door. So that's a big machlekes of Peskin. Some people say it's okay. But Moshe Sternberg writes in his Sefer Malam Uzmanim that as long as you haven't left yet, you're still in Achsanoi. If you were just there for an hour for a party, that's Mishkan Achsanoi. But if you were there for Shabbos and then you haven't quite filled out yet, you still called it Achsanoi. And Rabbi Willig wasn't so sure that was true. He thought that when your suitcase are packed, you're ready to go. And you're not really staying. You're just staying to light and have a singbo sewer and have a latke or something. That's not called an afsanoi anymore. The game's over. The afsanos is over at that point. So that's already a machlek as opposed to. We had a shayla lemaisa when we got married on during Chanukah. So we had our Shabbos. We got married in New York. My wife's from California. So our Shabbos Sheva Brachos was flipped a little bit. We had it in the Chosin side, usually to the Kala side. But we had Shabbos Sheva Brachos in Riverdale and our side, my side. And then on Matzoi Shabbos, we flew out to California for the next couple of days of Sheva Brachos we had in California. That Matzoi Shabbos was a little bit tricky. We had a flight right after Shabbos. Remember, we davened Ma'ariv after Shabbos, and somebody drove us straight to the airport. The question was, would he light halachas neiros? we weren't in our apartment anymore in the Heights. We were staying in Riverdale. I live in Riverdale anymore. Ready? We got married 3 days before. So where was I going to light? In the house that we were staying for Sherry Brother. I was ready 1 foot out the door. So according to Moshe Sternbruch, maybe you could light there. But Rabbi Willig was the one who made a Sherry Brother for Shabbos. So we didn't ask Moshe Sternbruch. So yes, Rabbi Willig said, you can't light Motzei Shabbos. You're already leaving. So where do you light? You have to light where you're going to end up Motzei Shabbos. Where are you going to end up? In California. That's a long time. That's a trip to the airport, a 5-hour flight. And the good news is that the time zones are working in your favor. So we were still able to light. It's only 11 o'clock at night, but the time gets settled in the in-laws' house. So we did help up his neighbors in California. If you're flying in the other direction, then your mom's up the creek. Somebody asked me today that they realized that they have to fly to London one night of Hanukkah. And they're leaving basically just around where the time of Hanukkah is. And they spend the time to get to London. There, the time zone's working against you if you're flying east. So they're going to get to London. It's going to ready to be Alos HaShach. It's going to be ready the next morning. So they won't be able to light in London, and they won't be able to light when they're leaving. So that's a pickle. That's a problem. So you have to stay away from London if you're flying. Flying Hanukkah eastward is not a good etzah. You can end up in trouble. If you have somebody left behind to light for you, a family member, that's good. But this is a young couple. They didn't have any kids yet. So that's that becomes a little bit problematic.
In that situation, could they use a battery-powered electric menorah? Would that count?
So that's a question. The question: where exactly are they going to light that? So some stations on the plane. Yeah, some say, yeah, I have to tell them that. They asked me all the different aces what to do. So I gave them a few aces. I forgot to throw that in for good luck. So I have to remember tomorrow to tell them the Rishon LeZalman held. If you can dig up a battery operated menorah, the problem is that all the battery operated menorahs now are all LED lights. They're not regular bulbs anymore. So it is very, very hard to find an old fashioned menorah with a battery and everything. It's almost impossible to find. So maybe we'll give them a job for next week to try to do. Anyway, back to the story. So this is the first issue that comes up at the Hanukkah party. Now, this issue now causes the corollary issue is that the person wants to eat. So they know they're not going to get home till 10 o'clock at night, but they want to enjoy the party. What's the problem? The next line of the Mishnah Berurah, the third Amar comes, that the middle of that line, that a person is not even allowed to learn before they light the menorah. That's a throwback to Gemara and Pesach. The Gemara says that when it comes to night of Bedikas Chametz, so you have to do Bedikas Chametz as soon as you can. You're not even supposed to sit and learn before you do Bedikas Chametz. We're afraid you're going to forget to do the Bedika. And for sure, you're not supposed to eat. So the Mishnah Berurah says that halacha is true for Neiros Chanukah as well. But filu hischa pesach. And even if you started, Mishnah Berurah says, that's already a chiddush. The Mishnah Berurah says that you have to stop right in your tracks and you have to go in and light the menorah. So you're not supposed to be eating before. So now these guys are totally in the corner. On the one hand, I just told them that they can't light where they are. On the other hand, I just told them that they can't eat. So what are they supposed to do? So the answer most probably is as follows, that this issue of eating before lighting the menorah is not an absolute issue written in stone. It's a gzeira midrabbanan, based on the Gemara Pesach, by B'dikas Chametz. It's a gzeira midrabbanan, Shem, you may forget to do the mitzvah. So many places can say, what if I set up a system that's going to remind me? I'm not going to forget. It's going to remind me. What's going to happen? I got my phone is going to start beeping alarms at 11 o'clock at night to remind me to light the menorah. So the poskim are making that when you have what's called a mazgir, when you have somebody who's designated to remind you, so this is better than designated. This is a phone designated to remind you that he himself is going to forget. The phone's going to remember to go off. So that's good enough to remind you to light the menorah. The truth is that this is not unique to Hanukkah. This is true by all mitzvahs. This is true Tavli Ma'ariv also. And the emphasis is that eating before Ma'ariv is probably more chum than eating before Hanukkah candles, because Ma'ariv's Kriyash was deraisa. So everyone relies on the skula. Some rely on the fact they have a minyan kavua, they always daven at the same time. Some say that works. And even if you don't always daven at the same time, you should set an alarm. So every night I always have an alarm set on my phone that goes off to remind me that way. For whatever reason, I'm eating something before I daven Ma'ariv, so that's okay. So it's the same Shaila Hanukkah, vis-a-vis Neiros, as every other night, Lagabi Ma'ariv. So the base eitzah is that one should set an alarm. And when we got married, so we got married, as I mentioned, on the third night of Hanukkah. So it was a little bit of a problem because we hadn't lit yet. And a lot of people had come from work. It was a Tuesday night, so a lot of people hadn't lit yet. So we wanted to make sure that everyone would feel comfortable eating. Those days, not everyone even had phones. And those 28 years ago, not everyone was walking around on the phone. So not everyone had necessarily such a quick mask here to remind them. So we had the band announced several times during the course of the evening. At the end of the first dance, in between, we had an announcement a couple of times. Everyone should please, when they get home, to remember to light Neiros Chanukah. We felt that was good enough.
Yes. What? I said, no one really forgets.
Nobody forgets. I don't want to give anyone a name. Hurry here. Less.
It's like Byron.
It's like Byron. Okay. You know, you come back from a wedding at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're tired. Okay, whatever it is. Hopefully you're right. So the bottom line is that the first issue we have to overcome is the challenge of lighting. So the answer is you probably cannot light at the party unless you're the balabayas. You probably can't eat even though you didn't light yet because you have that maskir to remind you. So there is another issue that comes up at the Chanukah parties. It's not really a Chanukah issue, but it comes up at Chanukah parties only because people like the donuts at the Chanukah parties. So the question becomes, what potential halachic issues are there in eating donuts? So believe it or not, the very eating of any donuts, forget about Chanukah, even on a Tuesday morning for breakfast, is a very potentially serious kashrus concern. So you're probably wondering, kashrus concern, what do you mean? Got hashgacha on it. So who gave the hashgacha the right to give hashgacha on it? Every donut is potentially built in with a kashrus hazard, and it's based on the following. So we need just a little bit of a background. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah that talks about two different halachas. The Mishnah says that there were a whole series of different things that Chazal prohibited to eat, which are not really kashrus concerns. There's nothing really treif. There's nothing treif in the ingredients, but you're not allowed to eat it anyway because we're trying to minimize the amount of social interaction you have with non-Jews. So two of those foods that are singled out by Chazal are, one was cooked food, what we call bishul akum, and one was baked food, bread, particularly called pas akum. So the Mishnah, it appears that they were both usher the same way, and they're both as chomer, and one is just as strict as the other. Then the Gemara explains, and then we show this a little more, that those two isurim, although they were instituted for the same reason, they part ways for the following reason. That pas akam is very, very difficult to keep, because sometimes you can live in a place where it's impossible to get Jewish baked bread. This was especially true in the Middle Ages, where the non-Jews had a guild system, as you may remember from medieval Europe, back from the Dark Age, Middle Ages periods. So the non-Jews had like the monopoly on many, many different trades and crafts, and they wouldn't let the Jews be cobblers, wouldn't let the Jews be tailors, whatever they wouldn't let the Jews do. So one of the things that very often they didn't let the Jews do was baking. So you had to be, in order to enter into the guild of being a baker, the first requirement was you had to be a Christian. So if you're Jewish, you were finished. You couldn't be a baker. So now you had situations where it was impossible to get Jewish baked bread. So what do? So even if you know for an absolute fact that all the ingredients are kosher, you're standing there, you're watching, you're seeing every single thing that's going into the oven is kosher. In the old days, not too much went into the oven in terms of bread. Now there are 4,000 ingredients in every product, and flour and water. That was pretty much what bread was, to a little yeast that you went for good luck. So comes the halachan says, if you really follow this Mishnah Kipshuto, that all bread baked by non-Jews is off limits because we're afraid you're going to intermarry with the non-Jews, like Bishalachom, so that's going to be very, very difficult. So the Gemara explains and probably a little bit, then Rishon a little more, then Rishon elaborate. But basically, Chazal watered down a little bit that prohibition of Pasachim. They said as follows. If the bread is baked by a private citizen, someone who you may actually develop a social relationship with, then you cannot eat that bread. Then the bread is treif, even if the ingredients are kosher. But if it's a professional baker, you know the baker, but he's a baker. He owns a bakery. I'm not interested in marrying his daughter. So somebody you have an economic, a professional relationship with, so then the prohibition of pas akum was lifted. That kula was not instituted for bishul akum. So let's say if you have a professional chef who's cooking for you food, that's still a problem. Why would Chazal more machmer and bishul than pas? Very simple, the Rishon explained, because you can live without that piece of fish. You can live without the piece of meat. That's very hard to survive without the bread. So the bread was much more of a tzorah. So therefore Chazal were willing to be a little bit more makel. Now again, the whole thing was the rabban anyway. Min haTorah, if the ingredients are kosher and the food's kosher, it was a gezeirah derabbanan that they were more machmer on bishul than they were on bread. So come to Shulchan Aruch in the fourth of the Rambam Kamos and presents to us everything I just explained to you. The Shulchan Aruch says in the fourth of the Rambam Kamos, Yesh bekamos shemekilim bedavar. There are some places that are very lenient in this area. The lochin pas minachdim avikichavim v'makom she'ein sham nachdim Yisrael. There are places that buy bread from non-Jewish bakers because there's no Jewish bread around. Yesh shasat chak. The Yesh Omrim, there are more adds on. It says, Be'afil b'makom she'pas Yisrael matzu ishari. There are those who are lenient, even if there is no Yisrael bread around. I mean, even if there is Jewish bread around, I'm sorry. Once Chazal were lenient, so then they were lenient across the board. So this is the machlokes, the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. How far do we take this kula of eating what we call pas palter? Palter means a baker. So the Shulchan Aruch says, it's the shasar chach. If your mom is stuck, you can't get Jewish bread anywhere, then you can eat the goyish bread. And the Ramah says, nah, it doesn't matter. Whether it's Jewish, but not Jewish. Pas palter, it's always going to be mutter. Most people today are making like the Ramah. Most of us go to the store, we'll buy bread, Freihoffer's bread, some kind of non-Jewish company bread, even though it's kosher. The kashrus organization is not telling you it's pas Yisrael, they're telling you the ingredients are kosher. So most of us don't bat an eyelash, we'll eat the non-Jewish bread. because we're following the view of the Ramah, that it's mutter even if there is an equivalent of Jewish bread around. And those people are, we call machber in Pas Yisrael. Many Hasidim, other people are machber, they'll only eat Pas Yisrael. So what that means is they're going to follow the Shulchan Aruch's view that will only be makel on this in the absolute view. If you're in a desert island, if there's no Jewish bread around, then never can you eat the Goyish bread. But otherwise, if you have any Jewish bread around, you have to go get the Jewish bread. So that's, we don't really paskel like that. That's a Midas Hasidus. The only time we all try to follow the Midas Hasidus is during Aseres Beit Shuvah. There's a special practice, Aseres Beit Shuvah. We try to be a little bit higher level of Kedusha. Some follow the practice Shabbos and Yom Tov. So some people would not buy fry half as bread for a Shabbos meal. They would insist on buying a challah, buying, you know, a Jewish baked bread. But basically, putting aside Shabbos, Yom Tov, Aseres Beit Shuvah, we paskel that it's okay. But Bishul Atum is a problem. How do you know whether something is cooked or whether it's baked? How do you know what defines as a baked item, which would give us a chance to be makel on, if it's professional, in contrast to a cooked item? Usually the answer is very simple. If it goes into an oven, that's called baked. If it's cooked in a pot, that's called cooked. So comes the Shulchan Aruch and says that there are some foods that are a little bit tricky to figure out what their status is. So the fifth of the Rabbi Kamos, it's the Ramah on Sivav. The Ramah writes, V'osa nilush, the following food that's called nilush. Well, let's talk about the easier case, and then we'll touch the croutons. Osa nilush, so we don't know what nilush is, I'm not sure. You kind of almost see the word lisha in there a little bit, like meeting, we're not sure what it is. But the next one we probably do have a good idea is shekor and kichloch. So we have a good idea what the kichel is. We have an idea pretty much what that looks like. Oh, mine mesike shikorin lekach. That we know. So honey cake, whatever, those kinds of cakes. So hey, bechlau pas. So comes to Rabbi and says, cakes are considered to be like pas. And therefore, any time, any person who is makel to eat bread baked by goyim can be makel to eat the cakes baked by goyim as well. And you don't have to call them bishul. Why is that? Why are we so comfortable declaring that the cake is not really pasta, not really bread? So why are we so kind of lackadaisical? We said, no problem. It's okay. Well, your cakes are fine. So the Taz in the sixth of the Mamakom explains, says the Taz, the litmus test is as follows. Anything that you make hamotzi on, by definition, is called pas. And once it's called pas, that it's both. Then you get a freebie if as long as it's professionally baked. Do you make hamotzi on cake? Well, it depends. Depends how much you eat. If you eat a lot of cake, then you make hamotzi on it and you wash the bench. So says the Ramon, says the Taz, any kind of a baked dish that's, although right now I'm only eating one piece of cake, but if I would eat 20 pieces of cake, I would have to wash the bench. That's enough pas to be included lekula in the kula pasach. The implication of this Ramon Taz is very obvious. What if I have something that I make mizonos on it, but I can eat as much as I want, I still don't have to wash. Let's say noodles. You can eat 100 bowls of laksha and you still don't wash them then. So noodles could potentially be a bishul akum problem, which wouldn't be subject to the kula of palter. So now it gets a little bit tricky. What is a donut? Is a donut closer model to the bread cake model, or is a donut closer model to the noodle model? Well, the answer, according to most opinion, is that the donut is actually closer to noodles than it is to bread and to cake. For the simple reason that a donut is not baked. A donut is deep fried. Deep fried, just check the oil contents. If you're worried about your cholesterol, check, take a look at a donut. It's got a lot of oil in it. That's why people like to eat it on Hanukkah. Reminds them of the Neiros. So come, a lot of people say, wait a second. We have a huge problem with the kosher status of all donuts. Because if a donut is not really pas, proof positive, as the Taz said, you can eat 100 donuts and still don't have to wash your bench, because it's not lechem, it's not in the ballpark of being called pas, then if it's not pas, then it's bishul. If it's bishul, then if it was prepared by non-Jews, then it is treif. Even if all the ingredients are kosher, it's still treif. It's prohibited with the Rabbanon, mishum bishul akum. So that's a very, very serious problem. So that was a red flag that was raised by Gedolei HaPoskim about the whole industry of donuts. All the Dunkin' Donuts, all the Krispy Kremes, everything. Again, even if all the ingredients from top to bottom are 100% kosher, choladeus, the very fact that it's being prepared by non-Jews poses a huge, huge problem in terms of those kashers. That's the problem. So what's the solution? So the solution is in the seventh of the Ma'ar Mekamos. So Shulchan Aruch tells us that Dovar She'eino Nechal Kemo Shulchai The gam ola al shulchan malachim laus was a pasul paperish shabishal akam afil b'tayisrael beis yisrael also shulchan liakam. Shulchan Aruch is summarizing a whole sugya in Masechta Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara says that bishal akam was only instituted on certain kinds of foods, not all foods. One of the conditions is it has to be something that is not edible when it's raw. If a non-Jew cooks your apples, makes your baked apples, that's not bishal akam. If a non-Jew makes your cooked carrots, that's not bishal akam. But I need the non-Jew, I could have eaten it raw. But what if it's a kind of a food that ain't a ola shulchan malach? Not a very fancy kind of a food. You wouldn't serve it at a state dinner. Wouldn't serve it in the king's palace. So, come on. That's not enough to be concerned. The whole gezeira was, we're afraid of chastos. We're afraid you may come to intermingle. You can assimilate. You can intermarry with the non-Jew. So, come on. If the non-Jew serves you a fancy steak, that's one thing. But he gives you a piece of junk, something that wouldn't even be able to serve at a fancy meal. So that is not considered to be enough to be included in this gezeira. So it's this halacha tucked away in Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Bishul Akum that became the source for our practice to permit donuts from the Dunkin' Donuts to Krispy Kremes, again, assuming the ones that have the proper shkacha on them for the ingredients. The fact that they're being prepared by non-Jews doesn't concern us, because it's generally assumed today that donuts are not that fancy kind of a food. Donuts are not a food that's Ela Shulchan Malachim. When was the last time they served donuts at a wedding? Very, very rarely would you see a donut at a wedding. Maybe at the end of Hanukkah wedding for a shtick, you maybe see a donut or something. Although it's true that in the White House at the Hanukkah party, they do serve donuts. That's a shtick also on Hanukkah. On a regular Tuesday afternoon with the French ambassador, they're not serving donuts. So donuts are not considered to be an Ola al Shulchan Malachim. As we know, there are always given to Shiva, there are three examples of people who eat donuts. There are truckers eat donuts, policemen eat donuts, and MTA students eat donuts. What's the common denominator? Because you eat donuts when you're on the run. Those are all people who are running. They're always on the run. So the kids running out of Dunkin' Donuts, crossing Amsterdam, those are the kinds of people who eat donuts. Donuts are not a food that you sit down, have a chashma meal, and you invite a guest for. And therefore, donuts, we can breathe a sigh of relief, are not really considered to be bishalachim. Which makes them pasachim. They're not pasachim, and they're not bishalachim. They get a freebie. So therefore, they're nishpas, nishbishal, and therefore, they're totally okay. Which is just as an aside, they're probably mutter during Aseret Mitzvah also. Because the chumrah of Aseret Mitzvah is not to eat pasachim. This is nishpas, nishbishal, this is nishgarnish. So nishgarnish is a double negative, but it's a nothing. Bottom line is that it's mutter to eat the donuts. So far, we have two out of the three issues we solved. The lighting problems, we said, it's not a big problem. The donuts, we're able to say a kosher. What could possibly go wrong with the latkes? So not something that can go wrong with the latkes, but you just have to figure out what bracha is supposed to make on latkes. Why? Well, latkes, we know, come from potatoes. Like most foods in Ashkenazi Jewry come from potatoes for a very simple reason. That's the only thing that grew in Poland, because potatoes grow underground. Generally speaking, the things that grow underground are very, very, they can grow in a very short amount of seasons. They don't need too much sunlight. So that's why potatoes, beets, and carrots are the only things that Ashkenaz make, because those are the only things that grew in Poland and Russia. So in the bottom, the Shulchan Aruch quotes a shayla, basically, the Gemara says brachas. When you take a fruit, you take a vegetable, and you smash it up, and now I re-prepare it as a smashed up kind of an item, so what's the bracha now? Does the original bracha remain the same or not? So this becomes the question in terms of latkes. Latkes started out as a potato, but it was crushed up now. Does it still retain the original bracha? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes in the 8th of the Gemara Kamos, Tamarim Shemiachan Biyad, this is the Gemara Masechet Brachos, if you take dates and you smash them up with your hands, Vasavim Isa, and you make almost like a doughy mix out of the dates, you take out all the pits. So Shulchan Aruch says it doesn't matter. Whatever you did to the dates, you could smash it to smithereens. It was once a date, it remains a date, and you still recite the bracha of Baruch Per Eitz and the bracha Chorona Bala Eitz as well.
So when you say
Shaka and Heaven's again. So this is the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch took this right out of the Rambam. The Rambam took this out of his understanding of the Gemara Masechet Brachos. And then the Rambam continues with the Fizeh, Huadin Bel, Lutferin, Hanikra, Padova. I can't tell you exactly what that is, but Mavarchin Alayim Bar Pregs. Viesh Omrim. Now the Rambam quotes, not so simple. Viesh Om Levarch Alayim Shahako. There are those who say, if you smashed it up, so now the bracha goes down, it goes down to Shahako. That's based on Rashi's understanding of the Gemara. Fitov Lachush Lechatchi Levarch Shahako. So the Ramah has an interesting compromise. The Ramah says, L'chadchil is bad to say Shachal. Why? Shachal is always true. Shachal is the all-encompassing bracha. If you say Shachal on anything, say Shachal on a loaf of bread, you're also Yetzir. So Shachal, you have a problem. It's a true statement. So the Ramah says, if you have a toss-up between saying Ha'etz and saying Shachal, it's better to earn the side of caution and simply say Shachal. Says the Ramah, but if you quote unquote made a mistake, or if you followed what the Shulchan Aruch said and you made a Barber Eitz, the Ramah says a Yotzei, because that's probably the Emes. The Emes of Pesach is probably the Rambam. Probably the fact that you smear something up does not change the bracha, but in deference to Rashi's view, so our custom in Ashkenazi communities, the custom is to go down a notch to make the bracha shahakol. So comes the Mishnah Berurah in the ninth of the Mamakamos and just qualifies this a little bit. Mishnah Berurah says, the Kamakam the Halacha Kaimel and Kedasa Mechaber, the Hecha Shema Moshan Kayam Lo Nishtanis Brichosim. The Rak Papaldva Shavat Kol Tsuraso. So says the Mishnah Berurah, we kind of walk a little bit of a tightrope between these two different opinions. It depends how mashed up it was. If it's something that's pretty mashed up, but you could still tell what it is. You take one look at it, come, I know exactly what this is. So then we should really follow the Shulchan Aruch Sachra, and we should recite the original brachos. If it was a fruit, that it sticks to ha'etz. If it was a vegetable, that it sticks to ha'adamah. The only time the Ramos says that the bracha is going to go down, and the Mishabu is careful in his lashon, she'ova kol tsurasoi v'lo nika klal mahu, that you look at it, no, I don't know what I'm looking at. So if you can't tell what you're looking at, then and only then the Ramos said the bracha goes down. So this becomes a loaded question as to a lot of these kinds of foods, from the apple sources, other kinds of things. Do I look at it? Can I identify what it is? So this is a little bit tricky. Identified by who? Identified by a person who knows what applesauce looks like. Identified by a guy comes from another planet and never saw applesauce. Only saw where apples, but he realized that's applesauce. Probably not. So it gets a little bit tricky. So this is the shayla that comes to latkes. So you take a look at a potato latke. So It's obviously a potato latke because you grew up with potato latkes in Hanukkah. Go show it to a non-Jew. Bring a potato latke to your goyish colleague and ask him what it is. So it may depend. It depends how big, chunky the piece of potato are. So it's a little bit of a tough call. Misafik, whenever you're not sure about this kind of things, the Bosom say you can really say the original bracha, because this whole idea of the bracha going down is very shaky, very, very big chiddush. And the Ramo himself really said just to follow it as the yes is ace. But the Ikra, then the Ramo's probably right. The Shulchan's probably right that the bracha never really goes down. So a lot of these kinds of foods that we think it looks the same, we kind of hope it looks the same, pretty sure it looks the same. So that would probably the bracha remains the same as well. So that's why I think the potato latkes are safe enough for a person to recite Hadamah on them, since a lot of them still have that, the good ones, not such good ones, you can't tell what they are, but they may not be potatoes, but the good ones, you can tell, a big geshmak, a piece of potato still in them, so one can still recite it by bread. It was a fascinating mashlekes that the poskim of the last generation discussed about what if you have a fruit or a vegetable that used to look like the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it, the fruit and vegetable, and then we pulverized it, we destroyed it, we did whatever we can to it, and then we reconstituted it. And now, lo and behold, it looks like the original fruit, looks like the original vegetable, so it came back to its original form. So what is that? So do we say that it lost its form already? It's done, Gemara. Upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's a new potato. That's not the potato that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. Or do I say, come on, once a potato, what was a potato? And for a few weeks in between, it looked like a powder. So that's okay. So that's a big nafkamina. That's a nafkamina for the mashed potatoes. Very often you go to a place, they serve you mashed potatoes. They're not really mashed potatoes. They're reconstituted potatoes. It means they started out as potatoes. Then they mashed them up, put them into a powder. They sat in a bag for 6 months. Somebody mixed it in water an hour ago and turned the trend. All of a sudden, it came back to life. It became a potato. It looks like a potato again. So that was a big question. Or this is the question about the Pringles. So when you have regular, good old style potato chips, those who still eat the potato chips. So you look at a piece of potato chip, it was never pulverized altogether. It was just a slice of potato. They took a potato, they sliced it into little slivers, they threw it into some oil and put a little salt on it, and sure, that's a potato chip. So the post can say, that's for sure Hadam, the holidays. But when Pringles came out, I remember as a little boy, when Pringles came out, so it was a whole tumble. What brach do you make on Pringles? When I was a kid, the psak was regular wise potato chips was Hadamah, and Pringles are shahakol. Because why? Because they're made out of potato flour, they're chopped up into flour, and then they're reconstituted and shrimp. So the way the story goes is somebody brought a Pringle to Shlomo Zalman. And they asked Shlomo Zalman, what bracha to make on this? So Shlomo Zalman said, it looks like a potato chip. So they told Shlomo Zalman, but now it looks like a potato chip, but a ball, it was potato. Shlomo Zalman's looking at the Pringle and says, it's not a potato chip. It looks like a potato chip. My nafkamina would have looked at that. It was always a potato chip for a few years. Right now, it's a potato chip again. So it came back to becoming a potato chip. So Shlomo Zalman said, you should make a dumbbell on Pringles. So what should you do? I think probably make Adama Pringles, because this whole thing is a funny sheet. This whole idea that the bracha goes down is really a Das Yachid. The Rashi is really a Das Yachid. We don't really pass in that way. So when you're not sure what the din is, you can make the original bracha. But those still have the old meaning of a Seder Yadayim. They still make the Shachal and Pringles. So whatever you do in Pringles is okay. So Lafini is the good Gishmach Alatkes that look and taste and smell like potatoes. You can still treat like potatoes and you can still recite a Bar Pri Adama. If you decide to have applesauce to get it, then you have to figure out the bracha of the applesauce. I have no more time left. I don't know how long it would take. So you have to figure out on your own what to do with the applesauce. But Al-Khopan is the same kind of a shadow. So Al-Khopanim, the three of the issues that come up on Chanukah parties, one of them is a pure Chanukah issue, that's the lighting issue. The other one is a kashrus issue that kind of just comes up when you deal with donuts. And the third is a brachas issue that comes up when you deal with latkes. So the Yavanim were trying to hashkichem Torah Secha. They wanted to make us forget the Torah. So we have all these Chanukah parties. It gives us a chance to chaz will the dinim. So we overcome. We have something to celebrate. We overcome the Yavanim. We're oisik b'tam with Torah. The Kodesh Baruch should give us Yeshua b'yad oisik Torah Secha. Okay. Okay. I think next Wednesday night, I have a chasa next Wednesday night. I won't be able to say the shiur. So that's why I wanted to get, make sure at least got one more Chanukah in before Chanukah starts.
That's lucky. That same issue would be a potato cooker.
Thank you, Henry.
Same issue, right.